Hello, hockey humans of the world. Welcome to Tough Call Podcast Season 3, where I talk about all the latest hits and suspensions around the NHL. Thanks to you folks, I have over 3,000 Twitter followers and over 250 subscribers to my YouTube channel, which is where you'll find my in-depth video breakdowns of the plays I cover here on the audio podcast. Just go to YouTube and search Tough Call Channel to find me there. And to get the most out of your overall Tough Call experience, the best thing you can do is follow me everywhere you can by subscribing to the YouTube channel Tough Call and leaving comments there, following me on Twitter, at Tough Call Pod, and my other account, at NHL Call. And of course, hitting the subscribe button on this Tough Call audio podcast and giving it a 5-star rating right now. Thanks very much for the support. I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey. I want to put the hockey back in hitting. Hello, hockey humans of the world, and welcome to Tough Call Podcast Season 3, Episode 2, which will cover the period from January 2nd to January 8th, 2022. At Tough Call, I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey, I want to put the hockey back in hitting. And here's this week's WTFs, or Weekly Total Fines and Suspensions. The NHL's Department of Player Safety issued 0 fines and exactly 1 suspension this week, which came on January 2nd when Sam Bennett of the Florida Panthers got a 3-game suspension for an illegal check to the head of Montreal Canadian Cedric Paquette. And this is one of those very rare times where I agree 100% with the DOPS. I would also have suspended Bennett. I made my own explanation video, which you can find on the Tough Call YouTube channel. If you haven't already done so, I recommend you watch the video, and while you're there, of course, subscribe to the channel. And what I found remarkable is my video and the DOPS video are almost word for word, point by point, the same. It's almost entirely the angle of approach Bennett takes that makes this hit unsafe. It's worth 1 to 2 games, and as they have him as a repeat offender, they tacked on an extra game. No issues there. It's absolutely the right call. I'm 100% on board with it. Where we do differ is they haven't issued supplemental discipline on any incident since then. And here we are several headshots later, and all the great work they did on this play is now lost with the lack of consistency, which is really what frustrates people the most about officiating and the DOPS and any aspect of the NHL's disciplinary system is the lack of consistency. But a win is a win, and this suspension is a win, and we have to take the small victories or we won't have any at all. One big miss from the week is so big that I'm making it my incident of the week, and that's the Trent Frederick hit on Kirill Kaprizov. This hit happened Thursday, January 6th, Boston versus Minnesota, and again, I made a video, of course, and I highly recommend, if you haven't already, pause this episode right here and take the less than 3 minutes to go to my YouTube channel and watch my explanation video. It'll make everything I'm going to say for the rest of the episode a little easier to process. And what's going on in this Frederick hit has once again completely divided the hockey stratosphere, and it all comes down to one underlying question. How much emphasis should a player put on playing the body over playing the puck? And there are many specific unique factors in this particular incident that you don't want to judge that whole philosophical question on. How much does the fact that Kaprizov starts stumbling forward at the last second come into play here? Are we willing to say it would have been a clean check from the side if that never happened? Or do we still believe he would have hit the numbers? Did Frederick soften the blow enough? I mean, these are all very important factors when deciding suspension in this particular incident. But as I said, it seems the two main conclusions people eventually have to come to, the two camps you reside in, are either A, it's not Frederick's fault because he was already committed to the hit when Kaprizov started falling, or B, that doesn't matter because Frederick made absolutely no play on the puck at all, which makes this hit predatory. And I'll tell you right now, and as you'll see in my video, I fall in camp B every time. Yes, the hit was kind of from the side, and yes, it was to a player who was unexpectedly falling, but there was also already someone else doing the checking, Grizzlick. And most importantly, the point is the puck was right there, and that's what Frederick should have been focused on in this situation. You can argue he was committed to the hit, but the bigger issue to me is why he was committed to the hit. Why was he hitting? We have to change the way these guys think the game. When the puck is basically put directly onto your blade and you still step over it to finish a check, what's your true purpose? Ignoring the puck so blatantly is what makes this a penalty to me and turns it from a hockey play into a non-hockey play. But even at that, you might also ask me, well, if the hit wasn't that bad and it wasn't his fault because the opponent was falling, why not just leave it at a minor penalty or even just give him a fine or a 1-game suspension? And you're right, sometimes things don't look that bad, or they just don't feel like they need 3 games. It just feels harsh compared to some other 3-gamers. But as soon as you start to think that way, as soon as you start to compare situation to situation and think emotionally, you've lost the plot.
I can't speak for the actual Department of Player Safety, nor do I want to. I don't pretend to say this is what I think they should do. This is just what I would do in my league. I can only speak for what I do as Tough Call, and the overriding principle of my suspension categories under the Tough Call system are clear. The 1-2 game category is for hockey plays gone wrong, and the 3-5 game category is for non-hockey plays that aren't malicious. To me, a hockey play is when a player prioritizes puck over contact, and a non-hockey play is when players go out of their way to prioritize contact over puck. So that's why this needs to be 3 games in my league. It doesn't matter why the hit went wrong. All that matters is the hit happened at all. Something I like to do every episode is acknowledge the many people who send me clips or tag me in clips or notify me in some way of incidents or interesting calls around the league for me to cover. I appreciate and I depend on these people because I can't watch every single minute of every single game. So I'm very grateful for the people who have embraced what I'm trying to do and notify me and ask me what I think of things. So I do a buy request every week, and this episode's buy request comes from longtime Twitter follower @BoltsJolts. Now, just before I get into the incident in question, I've been a longtime follower of his as well. He's always up for a good hockey Twitter debate, but with me at least, it never gets toxic. And appears he handles himself that way with a lot of folks. BoltsJolts recently made major headlines with a story that was picked up by publications small and large, including The Athletic. And I watched this whole thing unfold in real time on my timeline. Apparently what happened was, as most Lightning fans do, BoltsJolts was getting ribbed by another Twitter user about Nikita Kucherov, who sat out all of last season, if you will remember, and didn't return until the playoffs, when he no longer counted towards the cap. Another Stanley Cup later, and Kucherov found himself injured at the start of this season. So the heckler was given the old here-we-go-again routine, Kucherov and helping the Lightning skirt the cap, the salary cap problem. Now, lo and behold, after some back and forth, a $100 bet emerged with BoltsJolts saying this time Kucherov would play before the playoffs. And sure enough, Kucherov did make his triumphant return to regular season play last week. But instead of taking the $100 for himself, BoltsJolts said, "I'll tell you what, don't pay me. Why don't you donate to the Ryan Callahan Foundation?" As it turns out, player two in this story is a student and could only pledge $10 at the moment, which was donated, and with a promise to pay the difference. And BoltsJolts says, "You know what, no problem, I respect that. In the meantime, I'll pay the difference of $90, and he did. He made a $90 donation. So why did that make headlines? Well, his Twitter followers got a hold of it, and it spread like wildfire to the tune of over $24,000 in donations to the Ryan Callahan Foundation in like 48 hours or something like that. It's just incredible. Now, for those that don't know, as it says on its own website, the Ryan Callahan Foundation was established by Ryan and his family to make memorable experiences a reality for kids who are battling or who have survived cancer. It's a great story and an even greater cause. And if you want to make a contribution, please visit the Ryan Callahan Foundation website, ryancallahanfoundation.org. And just for fun, take a screen grab and post it to Twitter and tag @BoltsJolts. And now for the buy request he sent me, which was from Thursday night, January 6th. And it was the match penalty given to Calgary Flame Brad Richardson for his headshot to Matthew Joseph of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Of course, I have a breakdown video for this one as well. So if you go to YouTube, again, you can find it on my channel, Tough Call, the breakdown video for Richardson on Joseph. This play was a headshot to me, without a doubt. It wasn't malicious, but again, like the Bennett hit a few days earlier, it was a poor angle of approach and a play where head contact was completely avoidable. So with that, I don't get why they suspended Bennett 3 games and didn't give Richardson anything. It was that consistency thing that I talked about earlier, especially when you consider the fact Bennett wasn't even given a minor penalty and Richardson was given a match penalty. Those who followed me for a while already know the DOPS should operate independently of the officials, in my opinion, in terms of their decision making. I don't see their role as one of simply topping up a call on the ice or making amends for missed calls or what have you. If it's something they want out of the game, they should punish it, and if it's not, they shouldn't, whether there was a call on the ice or not. I'm just pointing out what the calls on the ice were because I just know that since it was called a match penalty, it wouldn't have slipped through the cracks. There's absolutely no way the NHL didn't review this hit, and so it means they definitely saw it and chose not to do anything about it, whereas I absolutely would have. This is definitely a suspendable hit and another miss for the league. Now we land at my segment called Here's the Thing. And here's the thing about all the incidents I've talked about today, the Bennett hit, the Richardson hit, and especially the Frederick hit. The thing is, they all would have turned out differently had the player delivering the check been more puck-focused instead of more contact-focused. To be fair, the NHL, I think, maybe for them, it was the right choice to leave the Frederick hit alone because their interpretation of the rules does not ask players to prioritize the puck. I personally like physicality and contact, and I want to see it as much as I can where possible, but they prioritize hitting and physicality above all else. That's what the NHL does. So I totally agree under NHL interpretation of the rules, as far as hits go, the Frederick one could have been much worse, but wasn't, and a minor penalty is probably adequate. But penalty or not, under the rules of any other hockey governing body, that hit would be less likely to never happen at all because the rules encourage players to play the puck first. I always say there's a difference between a hockey fan, someone who watches a lot of different hockey at a lot of different levels, different ages, different environments like me, and an NHL hockey fan, someone who watches the NHL almost exclusively or in some cases literally only watches NHL hockey. Now there's nothing wrong with being either type of fan. NHL hockey, for the most part, has the best players, the most talent, the most skill. If that's all you watch, you've settled on some pretty darn good hockey. But if you want to know what kind of fan you're talking to, a good way to tell is to ask them one question. What's the purpose of body checking in hockey? I'm a certified checking clinic instructor and a development coordinator, and running these checking clinics, one of the first things I ask the students is that very question. What is the purpose of checking in hockey? 30 years ago, I think everyone would have given the same three answers. To separate an opponent from the puck. Two, to intimidate an opponent and scare them from even wanting the puck. And three, for revenge for something that happened in the game or earlier in the season. And even 10 years ago, when I asked that question around the hockey community, there'd always be that one kid or coach who would answer, to intimidate. But it was definitely less and less as the years went by. And for the last 5 years, I now get virtually the exact same answer from everyone verbatim, to separate the opponent from the puck, period. The other two answers are now overwhelmingly the exception in hockey culture, except in the NHL. When I post comments about players ignoring the puck or about needlessly hitting vulnerable opponents, I see a lot of comments that start with, first rule of hockey, keep your head up. As if that's some sort of be-all, end-all thing. You have your head down, you get what's coming. I do teach hockey at all ages, so I know what we teach, and I can confirm one of the first things I teach is to keep your head up when doing all the other skills, for sure. But the second thing I teach is respect for the other players on the ice. Just because they have their head down doesn't give you the right to blow them up, but they don't ever comment on that second part. It's always, what's the first thing you teach is head up, not the second thing. Now, the majority of fans get both sides. There's a lot of good back and forth where there's acknowledgement a player put themselves in a bad spot and that the checker maybe went in a little too aggressively no matter what position the player receiving the check was in. But on the extreme ends of the spectrum, there's two groups in hockey fandom. The old school hockey purists, quote unquote, and the new age fans who want to ruin the game, quote unquote. In reality, I'm much more in the middle of these two groups than people might give me credit for. There's some fans who understandably want all head contact gone, but to me that's just not realistic. There's too many cases where head contact is going to occur even during the course of legal play, so I think we have to be careful with the wording. For me, it's absolutely the avoidable head contact we want gone, so I'm a little bit separated from that crowd of all head contact is bad head contact. On the opposite end, for some of the more vocal, truly hardcore, self-proclaimed old-school fans, anything less than legal public hangings on the ice is too soft for hockey. It's almost always, well, if you want a penalty for that, then we might as well have no contact at all. And a great example of that sort of statement I'm getting a lot of is off the Frederick hit in my comments by it. Sure, Kaprizov is eligible to be checked as the puck carrier. He's absolutely eligible. There's not necessarily a reason why he can't be checked. But what I don't agree with is there's always the excuse of he was falling. It's always something like that. He had his head down, or my favorite, he turned his back. Automatically giving a free pass for that and underpunishing a play to me isn't any better than only looking for head contact and overpunishing a play. Sometimes it is both. Sometimes a player is falling, and sometimes the player that's doing the checking did things wrong. Sometimes a player who has his head down or turns or falls still gets hit by a player who's just being an idiot and trying to run someone over any way possible. So the idiot should still be punished for his idiocy. And especially when you watch hockey and coach hockey under the guiding hockey principle I do, that the purpose of body contact is to separate the opponent from the puck, instead of the guiding NHL hockey principle that the purpose of body contact is to separate the opponent's head from its body, it becomes exceptionally frustrating to see a player injured in a vulnerable state simply because the player finishing the check ignored the puck to such a degree they actually, in Frederick's case, pulled their stick away from the puck and literally skated right over top of the puck to do it. Under my rules, this hit should have been avoided, and my reasoning is summed up in my motto I say all the time. I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey, but I want to put the hockey back in hitting. So I'll try to end off each episode with a little bit of fun trivia. And in my last episode, which was way back in September, so I apologize for that, I asked the question, who are the only two players in NHL history to tally at least 50 goals, 100 points, and 200 penalty minutes in the same season? Now, the player that instantly came to mind for anyone I asked this to was Brendan Shanahan, and he is, in fact, one of the answers. In his 93-94 season, Shanahan scored 52 goals and 50 assists for 102 points while also serving 211 penalty minutes. So he's answer one. And it's funny, he's the automatic answer for most because not only are his numbers lower than the other guy, but he didn't even do it first. 2 years earlier in 91-92, Kevin Stevens of the Pittsburgh Penguins scored 54 goals and added 69 assists for 123 points. And actually, he also has way more penalty minutes at 254 compared to Shanahan's 211. More goals, way more points, and way more PIMs, and the first one to do it. Yet most people really have to think about it before they ever guess Kevin Stevens, if they even get there at all. I didn't. I had to get a lot of hints to get there. And of course, Pittsburgh won their second cup in a row that year as well. And even more interesting is Stevens' teammate Rick Tocchet almost did it the very next year in the 92-93 season, again, 1 year before Shanahan. Tocchet had 252 penalty minutes, two off of Stevens, and had 109 points off 61 assists. But even though he had more points and penalty minutes than Shanahan, Tocchet fell short of a 50-goal season by just 2 goals. He only had 48, keeping him out of this club as the answer. This is all according to StatMuse.com. So there you have it. The answers were Brendan Shanahan and Kevin Stevens. Now I'll ask you this week's question. On November 11th, 1981, the Minnesota North Stars beat the Winnipeg Jets 15-2. And in the process, they set an NHL record for number of different players scoring a goal in a game. The question I ask you this week is, how many different individual players do you think scored the 15 Minnesota goals that game to set the NHL record? What is the NHL record for most individual players scoring a goal for a team in a single game? I'll try and post something about my trivia. I'm still not 100% sure how I'm going to do this without blowing the answer for anyone who wants to guess. I'll try and post it somewhere. So check my Facebook, check my Twitter, check my Instagram, and just keep your eye out for Tough Call Trivia and have your guess there, and I'll let you know what the answer is next week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Tough Call Podcast. At Tough Call, I'm not trying to pick on individual teams or players. I want to make the game safer for every player on every team across the league and at every level with no player left behind. I want to cover as many incidents as possible and promote using harsher penalties and player education to meaningfully reduce instances of head contact in hockey. I already get a lot of help from people like you who send me clips or links to incidents or even just a quick tweet or something saying, hey, did you see that? Third period, Bolts-Habs game, checking from behind, something like that. So if you're ever watching a game and you see something questionable or even a good clean check, because I want to promote those as well, send it my way. And don't forget to subscribe to the Tough Call YouTube channel. Find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to this podcast right now and give it a 5-star rating. Together, we can put the hockey back in hitting.